You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This podcast is brought to you by Voyage AC.
Believe it or not, hon, it's time to start thinking about Father's Day.
Whoa there, it's not even June yet.
Actually, it's the first week of June.
What?
I know, it totally snuck up on us. For my dad, I was thinking about the head-to-toe body wash and the shaving cream.
Mm-hmm.
But for you...
Honey, you don't have to worry about me, but if my daughters are wondering...
Oh, yeah, I got you, hon. The bubble bath and the enriching body and bath oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nothing wrong with my man liking a little pampering.
Mm-mm.
Voyage AC is your destination for all these amazing presents. So many gorgeous gifts for the dad in your life, like shaving cream, facial toner, candles, exciting scents, and a plethora of luxurious face and body products. So, hon, how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VoyageEtcie.com.
And don't sleep. You know Melanie's willing to give my friends and family discount to all our listeners right now. You'll get 10% off everything you buy.
Right. And all you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
This episode is sponsored by Cute Booty Lounge.
Hey, so what do you think of this little lavender ruched strapless dress?
Ruched.
Yes, honey. It's the ruching that gives this dress its va-va-voom.
If ruching is what makes you look like that, then I'm all in.
I thought so. Cute Booty Lounge is made right here in the USA by women and for women. The company is incredible, female and minority owned. Everything they make makes your booty look amazing. The dresses, the tops, the loungewear, the sleepwear, and their leggings have these super cute patented scrunch butt pockets. There's a cute booty style for everyone. Cute Booty Lounge has you covered. Embrace your body. Love your booty.
And to make it even sweeter, head over to cutebootylounge.com and enter the code THEONLYBOOTY to get 15% off your first order.
What? That's such a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, get yours now. Head to cutebootylounge.com and enter the code THEONLYBOOTY to get 15% off your first order.
Hi, I'm Dee Dee Pfeiffer, and I'm the only identified possibility in the room. I'm like, hi, Dee Dee Pfeiffer, I'm on the set today. You guys let me out of the Batcave. And they're all like, oh my God, here comes crazy, right? And I'm like, and by the way, I'm sober. And they're like, wow, she's loud and proud about that. And then I have people come over to me and say quietly and whisper, hey, I got 15 years sober. Or hey, I got 8 years sober. Or hey, my mom is 35 years sober. And you know what I always say back to them? Hey, why are we whispering? That's fucking amazing that you have 18 years or 2 years or one day. This is why I'm loud about it, because it's hard.
Imagine growing up Pfeiffer, younger sister to Michelle, and an actress in your own right. And then during a 10-year absence from Hollywood, you earn a bachelor's and a master's from UCLA before dealing with something you thought you might be able to keep to yourself, alcoholism. For years, actress Dee Dee Pfeiffer presented a good front. But one day, after starting to dial an 800 number for help, she decided to go to the place she'd been trying to avoid, rehab. But what would you do if you were newly sober and your famous producer brother-in-law offered you the role of a lifetime? Would you politely decline and keep quiet about your sobriety? Or would you take the role and go on a podcast and tell your recovery story for the very first time?
Hi, I'm Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. In September 2018, I found myself in an all-too-familiar position. Looking around the room at the other attendees at a famed writer's retreat, I realized that I was the only Black woman in the room. When I wrote about my experience for the Huffington Post, something surprising happened. 24 hours after my piece went live, I had 568 direct messages in my inbox. These were messages from people of all races, ethnicities, creeds, and nationalities who had connected with my piece because they, too, had felt othered. These are the stories we want to share. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say that this podcast is for everyone. You're listening to The Only One in the Room, presented by Lipstick and Vinyl and executively produced by Christina Barcy. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show. And if you have an Only One in the Room story you'd like to share, you can DM us on Instagram at The Only One in the Room. Enjoy the show. We are talking to Dee Dee Pfeiffer. Hi, wow. Dee Dee.
Hi.
How are you?
I am doing beautiful today. How are you?
We are well, and thank you so much for being with us. I have a question I wanted to ask you before we start, because we didn't really get to talk about this yesterday when we were on the phone, but tell me what meal, like if you were on a desert island and you could only have one meal, or you just, like there's one meal you could eat every day and never get tired of it, what would that be?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Well, I'm kind of a weird cat because, like, I'm not a meal kind of gal.
Okay.
I'm a snacky girl. So I would have to say, give me an appetizer platter.
Appetizer platter. What would be on it?
Oh, my God. Mexican food. It would be like little taquitos, little crunch, a lot of spice. A lot of spice. Like, I mean, I'm all about spice and crunch.
Okay.
And cheese and everything that's really bad for my figure.
I like how you took the only thing and made a variety out of it.
Right.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That is
so
awesome.
I'm all about patchwork.
Uh-huh. I'm like a grazer too. I love to just kind of go through and pick at things, and I love snacking too, so I totally get that.
Yeah.
So if we ever want to send Dee Dee anything, hun, it'll be a Mexican plate.
Mexican curry platter.
Yes.
Yeah. Or just like a basket of like a lot of crunchy, spicy, odd
Got
things.
It. Yes.
It's like, I'm so bad. Like, yeah, if you gave me one big thing, I'd probably donate it to,
right.
to somebody
Got
else.
It. Got it. you want a variety of things that you can crunch on.
Absolutely, because I get bored real fast.
Yeah.
Too.
Okay. And we'll talk about that too. So thank you for that. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. But I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, honey. So like I said, we're talking to Dee Dee Pfeiffer.
I know. It's crazy.
So I'm just going to read you a little bit about her, okay? After a 10-year absence from Hollywood, Dee Dee is back, starring on the new David E. Kelly Helm series drama, Big Sky, which we've been watching.
We have.
The series is set in rural Montana, where private detectives search for two sisters who have been kidnapped by a truck driver on a remote highway. You might also know Dee Dee from For Your Love with season 2 guest Holly Robinson Pete, or from the award-winning series Sybil. We haven't had Sybil on the show.
No, that's
yeah. Okay.
Take note of that.
You might also know her as the younger sister of multi-award-winning actress Michelle Pfeiffer and the sister-in-law of the prolific television writer and producer David E. Kelly. So welcome, Dee Dee.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
And you're up in Vancouver. Is that right?
I am in Vancouver. Yes, I am filming Big Sky.
Yes, you are. So this is a real remote interview for us.
Sometimes it is.
Sometimes we're interviewing people like, you know, in the next city over. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're all the way in Santa Monica.
Right.
Yeah. Upstairs in the
circa COVID. But you are in another country, and we're so glad to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Before we really get into your story, tell me a little bit about Big Sky.
I describe Big Sky as a wild ride. Mm-hmm. It's like, buckle up, because when you watch the first episode, it immediately sets up the dynamic that nobody is safe. Like, none of us actors are safe. Mm. And if you think you are, you better watch it, because with the slip of a pen, you're gone. And I say that because, although right now I think we're only on episode 6, there's still a lot more cliffhangers coming and storylines that you think you know what's happening. What I love about Big Sky is it's not going there. It's going somewhere else. So we always keep you on your toes. It's like emotionally charged. It's sexy. It's dangerous. It's thrilling. The characters are so diverse. I love all the actors on the show. Everyone's so different, mm-hmm. from young to old. Some of us have been doing it forever and some are brand new, and everything in between. It's a great like playground. And I think it's a show that has a little bit for everybody if you really want to go there. And it's certainly cutting edge for ABC, because it's a little bit more like a cable show than a major network show.
It is. You know, I was going to say that. I think it's in keeping kind of with Big Little Lies, and which was David's show before, David E. Kelly's show prior to this. And it's a surprising show for network, I found.
Oh, and the scenery is insane.
Insane. And no shade on network TV. I like network TV a lot. And
yeah,
by the way, you can find Big Sky on Hulu as well if you aren't able to catch it live when it airs on ABC.
Or you just want to store it up and binge it.
Yes.
I have to say it is a show that you really want to start from the very beginning, because it sets up the tempo.
Yeah.
It sets you up for the wild ride you're about to go on. And it's so exciting, especially now through these challenging times that we're all going through.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so grateful and honored to be on a show that gives people the outlet, if it's once a week, if you're going to do it that way, or binge it for a night.
Yeah.
Just to check out for a minute. And I think that we need that just for a minute. Just check out. Because listen, the world's waiting for you when we're done. You know?
Well, that's why people in the entertainment industry are considered to be essential workers right now.
Yeah.
Because content is essential to get us through the pandemic, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, great. I hope that everybody who hasn't seen it will watch it now because they've heard this interview. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit. So in your introduction, I talked about a 10-year absence from Hollywood. So 10 years since we saw you on the screen. I know you were raising your sons during this time. I know you earned a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's in social work from UCLA. Kudos to you for those things,
thank you,
by the way. But when you and I talked yesterday, we also talked about alcoholism, particularly high-functioning alcoholism.
Yes.
Which is usually defined as someone who's able to keep a job and relationships while still dealing with alcoholism. Some people call it a high bottom, right? But I think the misconception here is when someone presents well while they're dealing with alcoholism, people on the outside think, well, maybe it's not too bad, or like, why do you need to do anything? But, you know, yesterday on the phone, we talked about how lonely this kind of thing can be. And I was wondering if you could just talk about that for a little bit, like what the isolation and the loneliness was like.
Wow, that's such a beautiful question. And I'd like to say this is the first time I'm talking about my being in recovery is on your show.
Wow. Well, we are honored. We are honored.
Thank you. I'm honored that you had me on, and I got excited. I said to my publicist, I'm going to tell my story.
Mm.
And not the whole story. I mean, I'm 57. I'll be here all day long, right? You'd be like, get the woman off the show. But long story short is that alcoholism has like a perceived thing, like that you're in the gutter and you're getting drunk every night and you've lost all these things. And that is true. Okay, that's all true. What's also true is the high functioning alcoholic. Those of us who get A's in college, who raised two teenagers really well, I might add, and had three marriages, three divorces. I'm not going to say that that's, I don't know, that's up to, that's good or bad or whatever. And quite a few failed relationships in there as well. And work. I worked for 30 plus years in the industry. So I never drank during work or school, you know, and my kids I provided for absolutely across the board. But that still didn't mean that I didn't have issues with alcohol and my denial about it. And it was hard for anybody around me to say anything about it because it's like, well, so once in a while she drinks too much. Mm-hmm. It was more than that. It was much more than that. The isolation inside yourself is so painful. Because the bottom line is this, when you're drinking, let's open that lens a little bit. Whatever your drug of choice is, your DOC, can be alcohol, meth, heroin, sex, food, gambling, I don't care. Whatever it is you're using to an obsessive amount at any given time to run from something that's really painful inside, that disrupts your life in the sense that if you were to ask, are you 100% happy or even 90% happy, 80% happy? And you said no. Mm-hmm. Well, then that's something to look at, right? And that was definitely my story right there. Was I lonely? That would be an understatement. I was lonely when I was in relationships,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of that first, the denial that I had a problem. I'm a child of an alcoholic parent. Father had alcoholism all over my mom's side of the family, just all over, right?
Mm-hmm.
So out of four kids, thanks, Dad, I got it. I got his skin, though, too. I told you yesterday, I got his alcoholism and I got his great skin.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a 50-50 thing. But what comes with that when you're an addict, you have addiction for anything, the loneliness comes from the fact that you sit in your addiction and you sit with such shame.
Mm-hmm.
The shame just tears you apart. It's this quiet shame and humiliation and embarrassment. And for me, failure that I couldn't fix it. I couldn't stop it. And I tried, you know, the old, oh, I go from wine to beer because I don't like beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, I don't do drugs, so I can't be that bad. And I am able to go out and have a glass of wine every once in a while. You know, there's all these things that you trick yourself into saying, I'm not, I don't have a problem. None of those things mean anything. The bottom line is because when you finally come to the where you just say, and I think there's a big difference when they say, when you not give up, but give into it. Because
mm-hmm.
I always thought admitting that I had a problem was giving up. And to me, that's weak. And my dad did not raise me as a weak woman. This amazing woman, Kathleen Murphy over at Breathe Rehab, taught me the difference between the two. You know, giving in like a white flag mm-hmm. is different than
like surrendering. In that way.
Thank you.
Yes.
Surrendering
yeah.
is different than giving up. They are literally different. And I really was misunderstanding one for the other.
Yeah.
Because to say, I'm in pain. I'm not 100%. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to stop this. I'm not like my whoever I'm supposed to be 100%. And sitting there and drinking either by yourself with other people, it's sad. And it is painfully lonely. I could cry right now. Think about all the hours that I did that by myself. And more importantly, all the other people out there right now, especially during COVID, who are sitting alone with their shame and this beating yourself up because you want to stop and you can't, and you can't even admit that it's bigger than you are. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah.
What I'm getting the picture of is that on the outside, you look like you were doing okay. You were able to have a glass of wine with your friends and then go home. You were able to function similarly to your peers, right? On the outside.
For the most part, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there were every once in a while you drink a little too much. But if you really want to go there, everybody could say, oh, well, she had a long day. I'd drink too. Oh, if you had three divorces, I would also tie one on. Do you know what I mean? If
right, there were excuses.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know,
but
you had an ex-husband like her, you'd drink too. Or whatever that is, right?
But when you started to gauge for yourself that you were drinking more than you wanted to, and that you weren't able to stop when you wanted to, you kept that a secret. Is that correct?
Yeah. And you know, I'm going to tell you a story, and this is painful for me to admit, but it's really important. And I'll tell you why. As vulnerable as I'm going to be saying this, it's important because if I can help one person, if they hear this and they go, wow, Dee Dee Pfeiffer, I think I might have her story. I sat there at night and I watched TV and I would see these 800 ads, 800 addiction. You can call and be anonymous. I wanted to call and say, hi, my name is Jill. And I'm suffering over here and I don't know what to do. I don't know how to fix this, right? I didn't want to be Dee Dee Pfeiffer. I wanted to be Jill Jones.
Right.
You know, Bob. I didn't want to be me. I was humiliated. And I kept thinking, I'm going to call. And I didn't. And then my family came to me and literally said, out of love, we want to do an intervention on Thursday. This is on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. We'd like you to come. And I just looked at them and I started crying. And I mm-hmm. said, you don't have to do that. I'll go.
Mm-hmm.
Just take care of my boys.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, wait, you didn't tell us to fuck off and throw things at us and tell you, fuck you. And I'm like, no, I said, I was going to call. I just didn't know how. And mm-hmm. I didn't know how to say, I need help. I can't do this alone. Talk about a hard moment in my life. That was my bottom when I said, I need help. And my family was like, oh shit, she's not fighting us. So I was like, I just cock blocked your intersection
or your intervention.
I said, you're not going to bring that car and pack my bag and send me off to some other state. And they're like, that show.
Yes. The show intervention.
I cock blocked their intervention. And she's like, and my family like, no, I'm like, you better not do that. That's embarrassing. No. Oh my God. But it was a beautiful moment. It was a hard moment. And at that time I realized I went from the identified problem in the family mm-hmm. to the identified possibility.
Right, right.
And that's what Kathleen Murphy said to me. You have an option now. You get a choice to go from that to this. Not easy. No one's going to lie to you. It's a hard journey. But let me ask you, how's your life been going so far?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, has that been any easier?
Yes.
Not really. So you might as well go. Either way, life is going to be kind of a bitch. It's a matter of which road you choose.
Yeah. Absolutely. And can you just give me an idea of what it was that your family was sensing or seeing that made them want to come and intervene?
Absolutely. Isolation. Mm-hmm. On certain occasions, drinking one too many. But then, you know, the whole gauge is, but we just saw her a couple months ago and she was able to have two glasses and yet another night she was drinking the whole bottle, you know? But you could blame it on a lot of things. We all do it. And that doesn't mean that all people who do that are alcoholics. I'm not going to say that. Who am I to say that? I would never say that. And I think that there's also, in my family's defense, there was also that little hope inside of them that they didn't want me to be like my dad and everybody else in my family.
Right.
My
I was just going to say, how much was your dad's experience informing their worry, you know?
Well, my brother even said to me at one point, that, you know, you kind of remind me of dad. And boy, was I angry. Mm. I was like, but then my alcoholic, who's very clever, very cunning, by the way, my alcoholic inside of me is called W.D. Fitty. I'll tell you about that later. But yeah. W.D. Fitty, she would come out and she had quite a tongue. I could talk you off that in a minute. Uh-huh. I could explain, you know what I mean? I could defend being in my disease, which is, by the way, that's what alcoholism is. It is a disease. It's not anything anybody. I can tell you right now, for me and all my friends who are sober and ex-meth head, ex-heroin, I have friends who have food addictions. I went to rehab with every addict you can imagine mm-hmm. because breathe, they don't care about your drug of choice. And the drug doesn't mean drug. It can be food. It can be anything, right? If you have an addiction to something that's making your life kind of jacked up, mm-hmm. you could go there and you're with this community of people who have a common denominator.
And I think that's a really important point because a lot of people think an addiction needs to be to a substance, but truly it can be an obsession with anything on the outside that you're hoping will fix something on the inside.
There you go.
Yeah.
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 Exactly.
We talked about this yesterday, the trauma and almost every human being has trauma, just to be clear, of mm-hmm. some kind. But people who go into recovery often have trauma that they haven't dealt with. Mm-hmm. How was that addressed where you went? Because you went to a 30-day, you were there for 30 days, right? So you were in a 30-day program.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Intensive, inpatient.
Yeah.
30 days to not see my family, my children, no phones, no computer, nothing.
Wow.
Talk about a single mother being at rock bottom. It was by far the hardest thing I've ever done in my life is to be away from my children. But I knew if I didn't do this, I was going to eventually just, you know, slowly die. Like my dad died with his alcoholism. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And I wanted to be better than my father. I wanted to give my kids the best of me, whatever that was. So I had to, it's like boot camp, right? You just kind of have to do it.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
What I have discovered, not only through my training as in my bachelor's in psych, but also my master's of social work, but in my own life, one of the things that I was struggling with probably more than anything was undiagnosed and untreated trauma and PTSD and a whole flood of things that all revolve around that. And again, trauma is very subjective. You know, two men go to war, same battle, and come back. One's going to end PTSD and the other one's going to become an advocate for I don't know what, right? Like they're just going to handle that event differently, right? So in my life, I've had trauma, absolutely. So there's two things. There's an addiction and then there's trauma. Those two, they're like peanut butter and jelly. They love each other. They go together really well. So, right, because you can also have trauma and not an addiction and vice versa. So, but for me, trauma was a big one. And one of the first things Kathleen said was she talked about my trauma immediately and said, well, you have trauma that's never been really addressed. And I just started bawling because she was like, yes, your addiction is over here and your trauma is over here. And they both are big ones to have to look at and deal with and lean into and address, assess, and then treat, right? Mm-hmm. But often what we do is we treat the addict without going that layer deeper into the roots as the why are you using? The why are you using whatever it is, food, gambling, sex, drugs, right?
Yeah.
And the why is almost always wrapped around trauma.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to just jump in and add that because you said that addiction and trauma go really well together, which they do.
Yeah.
Trauma always goes with self-harm. There's some kind of self-harm that happens as a result of trauma. And it doesn't necessarily have to be addiction, but people hurt themselves because you're bonded to it. And that's why it's really important to address it and to remove the stigma from needing to address trauma before you move on.
Oh my God. I just love that you just said that word, that the stigma.
Yeah.
One thing that I have done, I'm just under 3 years sober. July 29th will be my three-year birthday, sober birthday.
Woohoo!
Thank you. Yeah. And let me tell you, man. And you know when they say one day at a time, I'm like, fuck that. How about 1 minute at a time?
Yeah.
There are some certain days, I promise you, it's 1 minute at a time.
Yeah.
Because that's all I can do
right to
get through this day. And not only just not drink, but smoke cigarettes. Honestly, cigarettes is my big one. Mm. Thank God I was never into drugs. And now pot's legal. Thanks a lot for those of us who are pot was never my thing, but I trust me, if I could keep my sober days and smoke a big fat doobie, I'd do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd do it. But, you know, but then I would be stoned every day. So that we're back to one.
Back to one, girls.
Hence the difference between a normie and an addict.
Right.
The addict will be stoned every day. A normie can maybe smoke pot every once in a while, right?
Well, you were talking about removing the stigma. And
my children, my boys are very involved with my sobriety because they have to be. It's about survival. And I say to them, yes, your mom is an alcoholic in recovery, but guess what? I need you to look at it like I had cancer and I'm in recovery. You know, it's the same kind of thing in the sense that it's like I didn't wake up one morning and say, hey, I want to be an alcoholic. That sounds like a good idea. Any more than someone wakes up and wants to be homeless. like, or have mental illness, or have any of these things that we suffer with. No one wakes up and goes, oh, this sounds like a good idea. So while we're blaming them as if they had an option, you know, so it's just unfair. So like I said to my boys, I need you to look at me as somebody who, yes, alcohol was my DOC, but it could have been anything else. And when I was younger, it was. It was food. It was sex. It was, I was anorexic. I binge and I did all of that, you know, it was whack-a-mole, absolutely whack-a-mole. But when I got older, cigarettes and alcohol seemed to be the easier.
That's where you settled.
Yeah, exactly. And there's nothing more fun than happy hour. I'm sorry. I just, mom, because again, the little snacky meals and the drinks, mom, that's, that was heaven for me over there, right? God. Yeah. So the thing is, like I said to my boys, we need to embrace this. And I think it was hard for them because they're like, they also don't want to run around and say, my mom's in recovery. She's a recovering alcoholic. But yet I'm like, and I don't expect them to do that and be comfortable with it because society's still getting used to it. But I do it. I say, I wear my recovery like a badge of honor because every day that I do this is another day that it's like boot camp. I got through another day of boot camp and I earned it. I earned these days to say that I'm, you know, these sober days. But it's more than that. I say, I get the opportunity to be a better person, a happier person because I'm in recovery. Because there's nothing more ugly to me than a dry drunk. Because if I'm just going to be a dry drunk and an asshole, I'll just drink. It's easier. And this, you know what I mean? Honestly. So if I don't get it right in recovery, then just go drink and be an asshole. And then at least you can say, well, yeah, she's an asshole. She's drinking. But if you're sober and you're an asshole, it's like, just go drink, you know, God, do us all a favor and just go have a drink. So if I can normalize it, if I can own it, then I can show my boys what that looks like. And we talk about it because there's 50-50 shot. One of my boys might end up having an issue and I have to make sure I'm a soft landing for them.
Yeah, that's lovely. So now I want to just move forward a little bit. You finished your time at a Breathe, right? Breathe Rehab, is that what it's called?
Breathe, yeah, Healing Recovery Center in Hollywood. Kathleen Murphy runs it and they are fantastic because they deal with both addiction and trauma. And IFS, internal family systems, and DBT, CBT, and AA. If you have God, great. It's easier for you. If not, don't worry about it. You don't need it. You know what I mean? They really, they pull in all these modalities, and it's fantastic. But here's the bottom line. This is what Kathleen will tell you, and I love to say this. You can lead them to water, but you can't make them thirsty. And I was parched.
You were parched. You were thirsty.
Girl, that's when they want to do the intervention. I'm like, oh, hell no. Get rid of that. I'll go. Take care of the boys and the animals. And I'm there.
Yeah.
You know?
Good. And so you left there with the tools that you needed to go on and reinvest in your life and in yourself. And then you and I talked. You didn't tell me the story yesterday, so you kind of left me hanging. You talked about your brother-in-law accidentally throwing you a lifeline.
Wow. Okay. So long story short, 10 years ago, I've always helped people, rescued animals, and I've always been really involved with all that kind of stuff. But 10 years ago, I decided, long story short, that the industry that I had been so loyal to wasn't so loyal back to me, right? And I'm raising two young boys by myself. Didn't like the way that, you know, women weren't allowed to grow old in front of the camera. You know, the reward for that was unemployment, right? And yet men were getting sexier, the chubbier and more gray they got.
Yeah.
And women were just becoming more unemployed. And I thought, well, that's just a crock of shit. And then meanwhile, I just started looking around at social issues. So I decided I wanted to help on a larger scale. So my sister, Shell, and I, we talked about it and she's like, go to college and get a degree. So I had no idea, not a clue what that even meant. So I literally walked up a community college and said, hey, I want to help people. I need a thing called a degree. And they're like, hey, which one? I go, I don't know. You tell me. And they're like, no, you tell me. And I go, I don't know. And they're like, a psych degree? I said, sure. I really had no idea. I graduated in 1982. No computer. Oh, okay.
Right.
No computers, no cell phones, no thesis statement, no algebra, none of that. So they were like, oh Lord. So I had a lot of prerequisites. Long story short, it took me 4 years to get my AA, 2 years to get my bachelor's of psych, and 3 years to do my 2-year master's of social work. I took a year off in between there to get sober. I took a year off to work on my sobriety. So there I was. It took me 10 years to get this degree. And I was about to graduate. I sold my home to pay back my loans. I did not know how I was going to survive on a social worker's salary in Los Angeles with two boys, teenagers. At this point, I really had not a clue, but I knew I wanted to help people. And this is what I really wanted to do. And out of nowhere, I was at the Department of Mental Health interning, and my brother-in-law, David, texted me. We never talk on the phone, by the way. We're not on redial. We see each other on holidays. We go fishing, you know, during the holidays. He texts me and he goes, "Hey, Dee, you still acting? I have a great role for you. I have a new show." And I almost dropped my phone. And I went, I read it and read it and reread it and read it. And I was like, I was like, this is what they talk about in recovery. Because my family saw that I worked so hard in trying to get it right, worked so hard to do the right next indicated action for myself so I could be the best mother I could be for my children, but also the best person I can be for, yes, society and help people. But then David literally accidentally did have this role for me. He had been eyeballing for a long time. And it just so happened, it came up at the very time where I was about to graduate and had not a clue
what you're going to do.
How I was going to survive financially. Mm-hmm. So, of course, my answer was, hell yeah.
Right.
I'm acting. You bet I'm acting again. I mean, 56 and you get offered an awesome role on a show. That never happens.
Right.
You know what I mean? At a time where I did not know how I was going to make ends meet for my children and I, but I knew that if I just kept one foot in front of the other and believed in good over bad, light over dark, you know, caring about people is important. My boys and I are thrifty. You know, we could live on very little. We had for 10 years under, you know, as a student, that I knew that somehow Mother Earth, it was going to shift and somehow it was going to work out. So I had just started crying. Like, David had no idea. He threw me a lifeline.
Yeah. Wow. That is so beautiful. And then, so tell us about Denise.
Denise. Okay, this is a crazy story, Big Sky. Lots of intensity. And then I will tell you one thing about Denise, that she is a moment where she's a smart ass. She'll say something funny. She more than likely will say what the audience is thinking. She is a rock, meaning like she's mama bear. She's the den mother. She's like the voice of reason, but she's also a smart ass. She is like the consistent. She's the thing that you go back to, kind of like a rock with the butterflies flying around it.
She's like an anchor
land.
There.
There you go. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's definitely mama bear.
Mm-hmm. How much of her is you?
A lot. Actually, David was right. She's, you know what I've done? When you watch the show, I'll tell you and your audience a secret.
Tell us.
She's not really written other than she's the den mother and she's 50. I'm 57, so I'm playing a younger girl, can I just say?
Yes. Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Mama's very playing well at that.
Very well, yes.
Thank you. I never thought at 57 I'd be saying I'm playing a younger woman at 50. I love it. Love it. And I'm happy about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's very kind of just broad stroked written in the script. Like no one really knows who she is. So there's a lot of room for me to fill it up. And guess what? If you watch Denise, she's always drinking coffee because Denise is in recovery. Denise is recovering alcoholic. I made her that. So she represents a lot of us out there. Whom, by the way, I want to loop back to what we were talking about, stigma. Do you know, I'm like, hi, DD5, I'm on the set today. You guys let me out of the bat cave, you know, and they're all like, oh my God, here comes crazy, right? And I'm like, and by the way, I'm sober.
Right.
I'm sober and I know it. And they're like, wow, she's loud and proud about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have people come over to me and say quietly and whisper, hey, I got 15 years sober. Or, hey, I got 8 years sober. Or, hey, my mom is, you know, 35 years sober. And you know what I always say back to them? Hey, why are we whispering? That, and they look at me like, yeah, right. I go, no, seriously, why are you whispering?
Hmm.
That's fucking amazing that you have 18 years or 2 years or one day. And why are we whispering? This is why I'm loud about it. Because it's hard. You guys know what I'm talking about. It is not easy. And a lot of people relapse. And that shit's serious. I've lost a really good friend of mine in rehab. He was in his 20s. Trevor. Buried him. Because he relapsed. So people go, oh, it's so sad you relapse. I don't take that shit lightly because a relapse could literally mean death. And my son's 17-year-old friend, who was like a son to me, we buried him. Drugs. 17. My son did the eulogy and he buried his best friend.
Wow.
17 years old. And he was a son to me. I was maybe a year sober. And then his sister died not months after. Again.
Wow.
Same drug dealer. And these were kids that I helped raise.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like when people talk about, oh, how sad they relapsed or wow, what a fuck up or whatever it is. And it's like, no, you can't take that shit lightly because people die from relapsing. You know what I mean? And so to say I have one day sober, 1 year sober, whatever, man, that has to be rewarded and supported.
And seen and validated.
Yeah. So to say, be quiet about 15 years. It's like, why is there still shame around that? Because I think we still carry shame as addicts. We carry that. I have still that little bit of that self-loathing quality that I have to really check. I have to keep checking that. I can allow myself to feel bad about my addiction when I don't remind myself that I have a story. I'm not my story.
Right.
And if you think about that, there's a big difference. Up until I got sober, I was my story. I literally was victim of my story until I decided, no, Kathleen said, you have a story. You're not your story. Mm. And that became my mantra. And all of a sudden it's like, I own my story. It's my story. It's not who I am.
I was going to ask you what it was like being sober on set, but I think you just answered that because.
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. It's hard. I'm going through a pandemic. I don't go out for drinks. Who am I talking? No one goes out for drinks. It's COVID.
Right. But you know, people are drinking when they get back to their own respective bat caves.
Yeah. And I'm staring at a bag of peanut M&Ms. And you know what I also went and got when I had to go get a headset? I stopped and got jalapeno kettle chips because that's my new heroin. Not that I ever did heroin.
Right.
But you know, it's whack-a-mole. I'm well aware of it, but I know I'm not going to die because I ate kettle chips today and backed that up with peanut M&Ms and a big cup of coffee with cream. That just means more time on the treadmill.
Right.
Or how about this? Two pairs of Spanx.
There you go.
versus one when I go to work next week.
Right.
I'm not going to lie. It is hard. It's different. It's like there's pluses and minuses. I don't get to do the things I used to do when it comes to checking out and drinking or celebrating and drinking. That's actually probably the hardest part is not celebrating. I got to tell you, I'm scared to go on a date. Because I loved going to have a glass of wine with a guy or a drink or a cocktail or something. And I don't know what that's going to look like to date. I haven't dated sober yet. Mm. So once COVID decides to move its ass away from us for a minute, it'll be nice to go. And I don't know how that's going to be. I highly doubt I'll go on a date with somebody who drinks just because I think it's going to be really hard for me. Not impossible, but it's like kind of like why go to a candy store? If you can't eat candy, it's like, you know what I mean? I don't want to be sitting there across the table from somebody who's having a beer. And if I can't have I don't drink beer, but I can't have a glass of wine with them.
Yeah.
Probably best I just date somebody who's probably sober until I get used to the whole idea. It's all new. Honestly, at 57, I have a new life. It's like I'm a newbie at everything. I got to learn how to date again. I have to learn how to be on the set sober again, being by myself, isolated in a pandemic. A lot of firsts, a lot of newbies, but it's the way I look at it. If it's woe is me, then it's going to be hard. If it's, ooh, this is new. This is different. This is awkward. Mm. And you know what I love? I got a sober group of friends and I have a social worker group of friends and I have a fantastic family, a sober friend as well, or a normie. I'm sorry. I have a sober group of friends. One's a meth head. One's an eating disorder. The other ones, the alcohol. We're a colorful group.
Right. But the island of misfit toys.
I'm telling you, we are all frick frack and everything else in between. And we like text each other. Like when I did this, they were like, I go, I'm going to tell them your names. And they're like, no, you're not. I go, I'm throwing you all in the bus. And they're like, they're so proud of me and they're nervous for me and they're excited for me. And I love us all because one's like an attorney. The other one's a flight attendant going to nursing school. And the other one, you know, is in a terrible divorce with three kids. And I'm over here, an actor. And they didn't know I was an actor in rehab. They had no idea who in the hell I was. They just knew that I was a chatty one that was crying every day for her kids like a sorry ass bitch.
Of course you were. So let me just ask, because we're just about out of time. I told you it would go fast. Since this was the first time talking about your recovery in this type of forum on a podcast, how was it? What was it like, this interview?
I'm not going to lie. When we first talked and I had to leave to go get headphones, I thought, I'm just not going to ever call them back.
That's funny.
Well, it was the same feeling I had when I did theater for the first time.
Yeah.
when my cue came up to go out on stage, a little voice said, turn around.
Right, run.
Run the other way. Yes. Get in your red Volkswagen, your 1966 red Volkswagen that has no gas. Because I was broke. I was a broke actor. Get in your Volkswagen and just drive back to your apartment and don't ever look back.
Right. I have a default run button too, for sure. But how was it?
This was fantastic. This was so beautiful. I can't thank you enough because, you know, for now, it's like, this was my story. You gave me a beautiful platform to tell my story in. And now people can take it and they can do whatever they want with it. And that is, hey, welcome to America, you know. Hopefully it helps one person. I felt really vulnerable, but that's just because it's like a new jacket. You know, when you put a new jacket on, it's kind of like stiff and you gotta wear it in. Me talking about my addiction, this is new for me. I've only talked to my sober friends and my family and friends about it. So to go on this kind of a platform and put it out there, it makes me feel really vulnerable.
Of course.
But I know that, like my friend said this, this is my sober friend, he's a meth head. he said, no one can predict the future, but when I hear your story, I hear this. Nothing is impossible when you let people in. So if a few people feels a little less alone, feels a little more hopeful after hearing my story, then my uncomfortable feelings of vulnerability are well worth it.
Oh, yes. And then again, you're the possibility.
Yeah.
You become the possibility. And that's where we started, which is so great. And Dee Dee, I just got to tell you, from an interviewer standpoint, you were wonderful. I'm so glad that you made yourself vulnerable. I agree with you. I think your story is really important. It's a point of view we don't always hear.
Yeah.
And I don't think it gets talked about enough because there's a lot of shame around, especially women who may not be able to identify with the guy on, you know, in front of the liquor store with a bottle in the bag, but still maybe want to stop drinking. And there's no place for them to go with that. And you just offered something that is really special. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I hope that my story, maybe if it helped one person, then this was a beautiful day because people need people. But you know, I will say this, like I said, if you're not ready, that's okay. If people aren't ready, I wasn't ready until I was ready.
Right.
And that wasn't for anybody else to tell me when I was ready. Like I can't tell you what your bottom looks like. Your bottom is your bottom, right?
Yeah.
And I got to tell you too, being a high functioning alcoholic, some people were like, whoa, I had no idea, Dee Dee. Like literally, I was able to hide it that well for so long. Other people were like, it's about fucking time the bitch went to rehab.
Right.
You know what I mean?
and that is the thing, right? Is that it's eventually it unravels and more people will be less surprised when you go to rehab, which is, you know, that's just part of it. But you're right. The reason it's important for you to talk about your bottom is so that it might help someone else find theirs if they're not sure. And a bottom doesn't have to be the absolute bottom. It can just be where you stop digging. So we're going to leave that there, but I'm going to ask you where people can find you.
Oh, look at me. I'm being a big girl. Never did social media until I did the show because they asked me to. Uh-huh. So I only do Instagram because Twitter, I think, is kind of mean. And Mama, I don't do mean. I do Instagram, Dee Dee Pfeiffer Official.
Right.
And you're going to see pictures of like my bird, my dog, my cat. It's pretty easy.
And you.
Oh, and the show. And I got to say, now that I have told my story in a public venue, I'm going to now start on my Instagram talking about being sober more. Because I wanted to have it be told first in my words. So then now when I talk about it, people can say, because I'm going to now tell people on my Instagram, go to your show.
Here and
listen to my story.
Yes, you
are. So they'll
know,
well, how come all of a sudden she's talking about being sober? Where'd that come from?
Yes, it came from the only one in the room.
There you go.
There we go.
It did. It came. There you go.
Oh, that's so great. Thank you again, Dee Dee. This has been a delight. And I'm so glad. Shout out to Anthony Turk for connecting us, because I just really, I adore him and his clients.
He's beautiful. Turk is my boy. He my man. I only have a manager and a publicist. That's it. I don't even have an agent. I'm so simple.
Yeah.
Oh, and potato chips. I have jalapeno potato chips.
There you go. A whole bag. Well, maybe not a whole bag anymore, but. All right. I'm going to say goodbye here and thank you again.
Thank you, Dee Dee.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share, or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.